This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
For hundreds of years, anthropologists have studied the social relationships of human beings, and none have been more confounding than what they call the Different Strokes Effect.
Get it?
Meet Jade Gulliver, a charmingly low-maintenance, amicable sci-fi fan and avid podcaster. And David Lim, a top model strutting, goldfish-loving, walking jukebox. So, can you handle the difference? Get ready for Different Strokes.
Cause it takes different strokes to move the world. Yes, it does. It takes different strokes to move the world.
This is Different Strokes on Joy 94.9 with Jade and Dave. At the top of the show, we played Beyonce, Countdown.
Now, Jade, some rather shocking allegations here.
Mm-hmm.
You suggested that you and I might need to go do some couples counselling.
Well, look, Dave, it was an idea that I'm a huge X-Files fan. State's obvious. I've been reading some stuff about how apparently when the show first started, the X-Files first started, the creator of the show, Chris Carter, wanted David Duchovny and Gillian Anderson to do couples therapy so that they could, you know, get on to the TV show and, like, really relate to each other, because they had to have this really intense relationship, right?
I don't know. Look, we've been doing this show for about 4 years now. Yeah. I don't know how more intense it could get.
Yeah.
You know, being on a gay and lesbian radio station, we have to keep some sort of decorum about our conduct here.
Well, I just think that maybe there might be some niggles that will emerge, you know, due to some sort of four-year itch or whatever.
This just feels like you're fishing for drama.
Yeah.
And this sounds like fodder for a possible reality show.
Yes.
Are you possibly hinting to our strokers that there will be a Different Strokes reality show?
Dave, there's only one thing that I love more than X-Files, and that is a reality television show by the name of The Steph Show. Do you remember that?
Is this about Steph McIntosh?
Yeah, I remember Steph McIntosh and her climb to fame.
Look, that was entertaining on a few levels.
Yeah, yeah. So, okay. I think, you know, maybe the perfect combination for us would be something like The Steph Show.
Where, what, both of us are clawing for fame.
Yeah.
And basically our Different Strokes, our listeners and viewers will get to see the drama.
Yeah, well,
the tears and the tension and the hard work.
Well, I think, The Steph Show was really about Stephanie McIntosh's, you know, her ultimate goal was...
Her ambition.
Was to be some sort of music star, right? And it was a behind-the-scenes look at what you had to do to be a music star.
I actually haven't seen very much of The Steph Show. I've only seen bits and pieces here. Mm-hmm. Was it actually very explorative? Was it like, you know, expose?
Look, Dave, what do you think?
I mean, I don't know. I'm not trying to shade old Steph McIntosh here, but come on.
It lasted about 5 or 6 episodes for a start. And
you can get a lot covered in 5 or 6 episodes.
And she... Basically, you know, we did get to spend some time at the house of McIntosh and, you know, found out some really important things about her life, like who her boyfriend was at the time.
Do we learn things like, you know, what kind of dog she has, what she has for breakfast?
Yeah, and there was that kind of, you know, all of the behind the scenes of what it takes to put together an album, you know, all of that tension, you know, riding around in cars.
I think our Different Strokes listeners or our strokers would actually be interested to see what happens, when the mics are on like it is right now, you know, what it actually looks like, both of us talking in a studio. So, you know, I'm all for us doing our own reality show. Sure, it sounds like we're climbing on a vanity combi van, but
we love the vanity combi van.
When
Dave?
Are we not on the vanity combi van? I mean, if you can't love yourself.
Yeah.
How the hell are you going to love somebody else? Can I get an amen? To borrow RuPaul's saying.
Okay, so Dave, you must feel so lucky to go and watch these shows that you would never have thought to watch ever before. Look, I always go on the personal recommendation of a friend when it comes to TV shows because I'm quite loyal with the series that I watch.
Tune in for a Different Strokes take on television.
This is Different Strokes on Joy 94.9 with Jade and Dave. Dave, that boy James tweeted us. He says, so when will we be seeing your reality show? Have you thought of a name yet?
Look, that boy James, we're not very imaginative in the naming department.
Yeah.
Just a bit of history for you guys. We didn't even come up with the name Different Strokes for our show.
Yeah.
Your girlfriend, your girlfriend Jade actually came up with that.
Yes.
So we can't even take credit.
No. For
something as simple as that.
No, if it was up to us, we still wouldn't be named.
It'll probably be some sort of Paula Abdul song that we would have named ourselves after.
Opposites attract.
Yes. Look, we'll have to get back to you guys about that, but, you know, it's something Jade and I are definitely considering doing, you know.
Yeah, we're currently taking offers. Reading contracts, all that kind of boring
stuff.
Yeah,
all that kind of, you know, media mogul stuff.
Yeah.
So basically, if Steph McIntosh's reality show producer wants to approach us.
We're open to offers.
Look, Jade, on to a more like a proper TV show now.
Yeah, yeah.
Terra Nova. It doesn't get more proper than this. I mean, the budget is huge for this one.
Yeah, well, you know, one of the immediate things I noticed, Dave, when watching this show was this is a big, ambitious television show. You know, when you consider people make movies about this kind of thing.
They do. I mean, there are dinosaurs involved. There's a bit of time travel. Yeah. Steven Spielberg is executive producer.
Mm-hmm.
So it really is big. And I heard somewhere that an episode of Terra Nova averages about $4 million to make. You know, it's crazy. Mm-hmm. It really is crazy. Like you said, people do make movies, you know, out of stuff like that. So I'm really interested to see how the storyline backs it up because for me, it's so important to be able to follow a show and feel that there is substance in the character and all that. And, you know, Jade, you and I have always said that it's a little hard to judge a show based on the first episode.
Yeah.
But what are our thoughts on Terra Nova? I mean, we've seen the first one.
Well, I actually really enjoyed this show. Like, it's really rare for me to immediately go, oh, I actually really wanted, you know, to watch more and find out more. Very rare for me to feel that way about a television show so early on. And particularly, like, I found it interesting as a sci-fi show because it's obviously, it's okay, so it's set in 2149. The world is inhabitable, inhospitable.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
You're basically struggling to live on Earth because it's so polluted.
Yeah, and you've got something called a rebreather that helps you even breathe the air. It's like gotten to that point. And basically there's, you know, in one of the first scenes, someone comes in and they're actually excited about seeing an orange.
Yeah, you know, to see a fresh piece of fruit was such a rare sighting.
And so but what's happened is scientists have discovered a way to go back 85 million years ago to the Cretaceous period and basically start a civilization there. And there's sort of this migration program that's beginning to happen where people can get recruited or they can be part of a lottery and it's, you know, this dream world that you can go back to.
And you just go back and they've basically, you know, the story takes place as not the first colony to go back 85 million years. The family that Terra Nova follows, the Shannon family, they're actually part of the seventh lot of migration. So by the time they arrive back in time, there was already things happening. There was already camp. There was already a community, civilization, order happening, so to speak. But what was really interesting is that I know a lot of sci-fi geeks out there will be like, oh, you know, every time there's a bit of time travel, there's, you know, bound to be theoretical issues because if you go back in time, any sort of changes you make then would drastically affect the future.
Yeah.
Like you might not be born, for instance, you know, and things like that. So how Terra Nova writers have gotten around that is they've actually, you know, made up this thing where everyone has gone back in time, but they're living in a parallel universe. So they're sort of like living.
Well, Dave, I would say that it's probably based on theoretical science.
I think it's crazy, first of all.
But you, Dave, would be surprised at what actual scientists come up with on a theoretical level.
I know that aspect of things might actually excite a lot of viewers about Terra Nova, but my impression from the first episode is that it's actually not very sci-fi. It's not actually as dense and that theoretical. It feels like a family drama. You know, they're very human relations. There are dynamics in the family that you see kind of play out. You see the characters. You learn a bit more about the tension. I don't want to give too much away, but you guys can go watch it. But bottom line is, because I'm not a sci-fi viewer like yourself, Jade, mm-hmm. I came to the show and I felt immediately able to embrace it.
Well, I remember, Dave, you were saying about comparisons to something like Battlestar Galactica. Like, I haven't really watched much Battlestar Galactica, but my impression is this is easier to relate to because you're not actually thrown into... We understand dinosaurs, you know.
Dinosaurs are cool in this show.
There's not a new race of people that we're having to learn about, that, you know, we're not going back in time and finding new races of people. We're not in another planet. It is, in fact, our planet. It is at a different time, but it's all relatable in terms of it's something.
So they made it easier for us,
yeah,
really.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a bit more palatable than a general sci-fi show, I find.
Welcome to Different Strokes Online. Log in to hear Jade and Dave's perspectives on online media.
The internet should not be used as a high-tech babysitter. We need to make sure that when our kids surf the web, they don't drown.
Our guest tonight is the current star of Here TV's program, Just Josh. He also holds down a day job as Here Media's Senior Vice President of Original Programming and Development, and Here is one half of a podcast I still mourn the end of, Here with Josh and Sarah. Welcome to Different Stroke, Josh.
Thank you very much.
Now, Josh, I would feel completely remiss if I didn't mention Here with Josh and Sarah. It was a podcast I was completely addicted to, and it makes me very, very sad that it doesn't exist anymore. But you've obviously gone from those podcasts onto TV. Did you ever anticipate that you would become kind of a personality? Because obviously you've got this kind of day job as well.
No, not really. And I have to tell you, Sarah will be very happy when I tell her about that, because she feels so left behind. Because, you know, Sarah left our company and went back to graduate school in Indiana. So I every once in a while get emails from her saying, like, nobody misses me. So she'll be very happy to know that she's greatly missed. No, it wasn't really ever my goal to sit out and be on television. My background is really in film and theater and television, but working, you know, sort of on the production side. And it was just a sort of organic evolution out of the podcast and then some of the other stuff we were doing, and our general manager, who basically created that podcast, her and me, said about a year ago, it was like, hey, let's do, you know, this show, just you. And I was really hesitant because I was so busy, just like you said, with my day job, and he kept pushing it, and finally he came up with a really fun idea of how we could do it. And so I just said, oh, okay, let's give it a shot.
And you've just finished your first season of Just Josh. How would you describe the show?
Well, the show really is a reflection of my love affair with New York City. I wasn't born and raised here, but my entire family, other than me, was born here. And so all my grandparents, you know, all four of my grandparents and my cousins and aunts and uncles. And so I spent a great deal of time here growing up, and I just love the city and love to explore the city. And so when I moved here about 16 years ago, you know, I just really dove in and found great things, great people, great restaurants, great artists, all sorts of, like, eclectic people that make up this beautiful city of ours. And, you know, my sister used to tease me. She's like, oh, you should be a tour guide, because mm-hmm. anytime anybody would come to town, I'd be like, no, we have to go here, and sort of take you off the beaten path. So it's kind of like a television tour guide of New York City, of things that you wouldn't necessarily get in your Fromers or your regular tour book.
It's interesting that you mentioned the whole tour guide thing, because when I was watching the show, I guess, you know, as someone who is from overseas and has been to New York, but has only really done the touristy things, what I really liked about the show was the on-location stuff, and I really started to get a sense of the city beyond that kind of that touristy stuff.
Oh,
so is it really just the reason behind that? Is that really just because you love it so much?
You know, with anything in television, you know, there's like, oh, could you do me a favor and, you know, talk to this person, or people pitch us ideas for segments all the time. So, you know, I mean, I sort of run out of ideas. Like, we have a running sort of list of things that I would like to do. I want to go have dinner with one of our council people, and I would love to, you know, go kayaking or take a trapeze lesson. So some of them just sort of keep moving down the list because we can't get to them. And mm-hmm. and so it does turn out to be a combination of things that me and my staff go after directly and seek out, and other stuff that sort of comes to us. But nothing on the show is, I usually don't agree to do something unless I have, because this isn't really what I was, you know, necessarily born to do, if you will, not Dick Cavett or, like I said, Dinah Shore. You know, I have to have some sort of attachment to it. Like, it has to move me in some way. I have to be interested in the subject, because for fear that, like, I just would sort of zone out. So everything you see on the show is of interest to me. Some of it, like I said, we go after, and some of it actually comes to us.
And how do you decide on guests? Do you have a lot of control over it?
I generally work with the general manager. His name is Eric Feldman. He actually created the show for me, and he was the one who sort of came up with this sort of format of Just Josh. And so what we do is we have a list of, like, subjects or people or things to do. And we kind of go through it and we look like, oh, this would be really fun. And, like, maybe we could do, you know, these three things together, because that would maybe make, because each half hour is made up of three segments and then kind of an epilogue, sort of wrap up of something that's, you know, bugging me, sort of like an op-ed piece. So mm-hmm. we generally look at to see if people sort of fit together or things can fit together. Or sometimes we just, like, you know what, let's just throw these together and see, you know, they have nothing, you know, on the surface to do with one another, but let's see how they would sort of work. So there have only been two instances where I've refused to do something, and not refused, but just asked that I don't do it. And one was just, it sort of slipped through the cracks, and we didn't see it till the last minute. The other thing is they wanted me to go be part of a stand-up comedy improv troupe, and that's just, so I'm willing to make a fool out of myself in a lot of ways, and if you've seen the show, you know, like, oh, I'll pretty much put myself in any situation. But there was something about the comedy thing that made me uneasy. So there were only two points where I said no, but pretty much that our GM, who also produces the show, has a general idea of, like, my sort of wheelhouse around what I feel comfortable doing and, mm-hmm. and what I probably wouldn't feel comfortable doing.
I really love the vibe of the show, because it does seem, when I watch a lot of kind of American talk shows, if you will, there is kind of this slick and showy thing that happens, and it's not very deep, and you just kind of get this glossed over thing, and I feel like it's definitely got a more low-key and intimate feel. Is that something that you've actively tried to create?
It is, actually, because it goes back to kind of what I was talking about. Like, I'm not necessarily, like I said, I don't think I was necessarily born to be, like, on television, but, like, I am a sort of natural talker. So I like to talk to people, and that's generally the vibe of the show.
You say that it's about pop artist with character. Forget what you've heard. I do listen to Strummy Lala music, as I like to call it.
Get ready for a Different Strokes take on music.
This is Different Strokes on Joy 94.9. Dave, we've had a text come in from Craig again, who, you know, he wasn't frightened by my proposal that we do, in fact, keep notes on what their interests are. My copy of Cinderella Eyes arrived in the post today. I've been slack in ordering it. I'm sure it will be great. So I am very interested in Dave's review, but I am really looking forward to a Girls Aloud reunion in 2012. And then there's a lot of yippeeing going on after that.
Look, Craig is a very big Girls Aloud fan, mm-hmm. and, you know, he and I share that in common. But, you know, I also know that Girls Aloud didn't necessarily appeal to as many people as I would have hoped. And one of the people that I actually thought maybe, you know, Girls Aloud didn't reach was that boy James, mm-hmm. who has tweeted us saying, obviously excited about me reviewing Nicola's album.
Yeah.
That boy James, this is how much we know our stroke is, okay? That boy James is, like, you know, indie hipster kind of poster child, you know? Mm-hmm. He is everything there is to do about
hipsterism. He more often relates to my side of the spectrum than yours.
Than mine. So he being excited to hear a review about Nicola Roberts is really saying something about how this Girls Aloud star has truly transcended and broken new grounds mm-hmm. here. So Nicola Roberts, I mean, just to paint a picture for you guys who don't really know about Girls Aloud, she is the pale-skinned ginger one of the group. Mm. I don't know why you're laughing, like it's, you know, something to be laughed at.
Well, you know, it's funny because, Dave, you know, my experience with girl bands is really
just based on her looks.
Well, based on Spice Girls.
Based on Spice Girls.
So, you know, is it, but now it's not like they don't even have these, they're not even named after their personality traits. It's just like that's the pale one in the corner.
Yeah. The funny thing is that Girls Aloud has been around for, what, 9 years? And I feel that out of all five of them, mm-hmm. Nicola Roberts is the one that maybe the public didn't really get to know the best.
Yep.
Because she wasn't necessarily the loud one. She wasn't necessarily the one with a famous boyfriend. You know, she only just recently emerged as a style icon in her own right. But, mm-hmm. you know, she spent a lot of years in the band kind of being anonymous.
I can kind of relate to Nicola Roberts.
I sense that you can, you know. So she is a little socially awkward, but she is feisty. Mm-hmm. That's what I like about her. And this album is a true reflection of that personality. And I feel that as Girls Aloud fans, you know, we kind of owe it to ourselves to check out their solo projects, even if Nadine's and Cheryl's weren't exactly great. we kind of owe it to ourselves because it might actually give us a glimpse into who the individual girls are.
Yep.
Because with Girls Aloud, you know, none of the five really write their own material as a group. They only sing a few lines here and there. So even knowing what each individual Girls Aloud member sounds like, it's a challenge mm-hmm. until the solo project phase comes in. Then we get to learn about their voice. And that leads into another discussion about why Nicola Roberts' album, mm-hmm. Cinderella's Eyes, is also great. Because for many years with Girls Aloud, we've only heard her sing in that very soft, very wavy style because all the other girls kind of have a very strong voice.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody knew that Nicola could also sing very strong and she had this grunt in her voice until this album came about. So this really is a revelation for Girls Aloud fans as well to really hear how Nicola can sing and her vocals. It's very peculiar, and I mean that in the nicest possible way.
Mm-hmm.
It's a peculiar voice, and when she sings, there's a lot of character in it. There's tone in her voice, and it goes from really strong notes to falsettos to a bit of grunts here and there.
Mm-hmm.
The album Cinderella's Eyes itself is a really good blend of super pop with bits of electronica here and there. It's very British, Jade, so any fan of British pop, like, you know, Lily Allen kind of stuff or Sophie Ellis-Bextor, there's no reason why you can't get into Cinderella's Eyes. Some standout tracks include the two singles that she has released to date, Beat of My Drum,
mm-hmm.
which was the lead single. That one sounds a bit like MIA mixed with Daphne and Celeste. I love it. It's bonkers. Lucky Day, which is the current single, a bit more mainstream, not as much hip-hop influence.
What was the one that you put on my Facebook, Dave?
The one I put on your Facebook is an album track called Sticks and Stones.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this one is very special to Nicola and for, you know, fans that have heard the album. This is the standout. Sticks and Stones is a stripped back ballad where, you know, it's very confessional. She talks about the times where the press gave her a hard time when she was younger in Girls Aloud. She was feeling insecure. She talks about the insecurity of being ginger and being too pale and kind of standing out for all the wrong reasons like mm-hmm. that. So it's like that survivor song that you want to listen to when you're being bullied or picked on.
Yep.
So Sticks and Stones is also a highlight from the album, but also tracks like Gladiator is one of my favorites. Very feisty.
Mm-hmm.
Yo-Yo, the next single, is also great. So there are lots of great pop moments, and I feel that people shouldn't necessarily judge it by the chart performance because coming from Girls Aloud, you'd expect, you know, all the girls when they come up with their solo projects to be as big as the band. But really, Jade, in reality, when Cheryl came out, she was huge because she was on X Factor and she's got lots of support. She's, you know, the nation's sweetheart.
Mm-hmm.
When Nadine dropped her album, nobody cared. But Nicola is actually with a major label, but the problem is that I don't understand why her album isn't doing too well and why her singles aren't selling. I just don't get it.
Is it because she doesn't have the personality?
Well, yeah, I don't know. I don't want to put it down to that because I feel that people are only getting to know Nicola Roberts as a solo artist right now. So I feel that maybe people need to give her a chance, but for some reasons, the two singles aren't selling. The album debuted at number 17 this week.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess that's respectable.
Yeah, but maybe it's not necessarily about selling sometimes, Dave. If this is like actually an exploration of who she is as an artist, then, you know, you do kind of have to be prepared to not be as – you can't – sell as much as a Girls Aloud single.
Yeah, and you're absolutely right. And this is something that she's addressed a lot in interviews as well. She didn't want to make a mainstream album mm-hmm. like someone like Cheryl, you know. She wanted to make an album that it was a true reflection of her. So there are lots of bits on the album that, you know, feel a little indie, a little inaccessible.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's not, you know, every track is not like a radio single.
Mm-hmm.
So it really is a true reflection of her quirk and her feist and her strength and all that.
Thank you for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.